when we got ready for this meeting, I challenged my students to come up with interesting titles, and I think Braley won with the Mutation Creation Station. And what I'm going to do today in this talk is present two things. We have a very detailed talk about how we do chemical mutagenesis and some of the safeguards that are necessary to prevent the mutagenesis from mutating you. And I'm going to go through that fairly quickly. And then I'm going to talk about a large screening we did to see which species were adapted to this mutation procedure. We have practiced cotton mutagenesis as a supplement to our program, not our entire program. And we've been able to identify improved fiber quality, high and low oil content, changes in fatty acid composition, induction of okra leaf and induction of early maturity, selective herbicide resistance, and naked seed coat. And so we've decided, why not share the fun and wealth? There's been a lot of fun, not much wealth, so we decided to share that. I would call your attention to the picture there. We were able to identify the first herbicide resistance, ME resistance, in four different varieties using chemical mutagenesis. The way I do chemical mutagenesis, I have never made a claim that it wasn't inherent, the variation we saw was not in the variety to start with, because we'd have to self and self and self and phenotype, phenotype, phenotype. The only thing I claim about the mutagenesis procedure is it makes me feel better about the money and the years of time I'm about to spend in this process. So bear with me as we go through here. We use EMS, ethyl methane sulfonate creates random changes in DNA sequence, and it really likes guanine, and it will pull guanine or substitute for guanine in there, and then when DNA polymerase comes along to finish the process, it says, oh, this is a mistake, and randomly puts any other base back in there, including guanine. And so it's you see a lot of G substitutions with adenosine, thymine, or cytosine, and it's capable of creating variation often not found in conventional varieties or germplasm populations, especially tomatoes and especially cotton that have been heavily worked by earlier breeders. This experiment we did this last spring is I called some friends and colleagues in Texas and New Mexico and asked them to send me Pima cotton, Upland cotton, corn, Arabidopsis, that was a new one for us, alfalfa, peanuts, soybeans, guar, which we had, wheat, sorghum, and switchgrass. And this time we took a different approach. Instead of tailoring the process for a specific species, which is how you should do it, we decided to see which of these species fit the existing process with no modification. The procedure we're going to use, and we started with 3% volume-to-volume EMS. The MO seed was imbibed, and you'll see for 16 hours. We tried to get 4,500 seeds that imbibed. We treated it with 3% volume-to-volume. We tried to achieve a 50% mortality. Okay, so we still want 2,250 M1 plants. We call them M1 the minute the chemicals applied to the solution. Then we set them in the field. We allow them to set open pollinated, but hopefully a many species self-pollinated crops. And in 2014, this fall, we'll harvest a crop. In 2015, we'll plant out 10,000 M2. Again, these are multiple plants from multiple seeds from each plant, and they're probably chimeric, and you'll see what I'm talking about later. And then in the M3, we'll harvest the M3 generation. Because I approach mainly public breeders, our deal is I'll split the M3 generation. I'll send you 10 pounds, I'll keep 10 pounds. So you can go screen for your individual thing. You're going to see a lot of slides like this. We have been very pressured to supply detailed methods and materials procedure, and we wanted to do this. So I'm going to go through here, but not spend much time on each slide. When you buy your experimental materials at Home Depot, it is pretty crude science at best, okay? And I especially like those orange buckets that say, let's do this, okay? So we buy lots of 5-gallon buckets with lids. We get lots of distilled water. We go to a pet store and buy aquarium supplies for the inhibition and disturb the treatments when we put them in. We buy EMS, and last year I spent $1,000 on EMS. And that's surprisingly not very much EMS. Then we get sodium hydroxide to neutralize EMS. Half-life of EMS and sodium hydroxide is like 2 minutes. Okay, so when we get done with the mutation, we've got to kill the EMS. And the reason we have to kill the EMS, if you'll pay your attention to the green box, this is the most important thing about this talk. If EMS was a person, their picture would be on every post office in the United States and globally. Ethyl methane sulfonate is a suspected carcinogen, a suspected teratogen. It is a mutagen, and it has a fairly acute toxicity. So when you do this, you need to be safe. And you need to use a certified chemical hood that's working, okay? You need to use proper PPE, which is a personal protection equipment. You need to use a rubber gloves and an apron, latex glove, eye and face protection, and respirator that has been tested so it has a proper fit, because you only get to mess this up one time. So the creativity is not the mutation process. The creativity is in developing a rapid and cheap screening process for mutant populations. And I've been surprised with this recurring theme as we go through here. This drought tolerance, does it emphasize nematode resistance? And so this is Dr. Sandy Lauer, one of my earlier students, and she takes this serious, and you can tell she's bundled up. The other thing I do is when I have a bucket that's had EMS in it, as soon as we neutralize it, I punch a hole in the bottom of it. I don't want someone out slopping their hogs or carrying dishwater around in a bucket that's had EMS in it, even if it's been neutralized. You count out your seeds. You're going to put them in a brew sock, and I'll show you what that looks like in a little bit. And so leave room for the seeds to imbibe and swell. And that's a brew sock. I was a home brewer for years and years, and so one day I says, why don't I just use my brew socks that I used to make home beer to do that? And we've got a Midwest supplies for home brewing and winemaking. Tie them in a knot, tie cord on them, because you're going to need to pick them up without putting your hand in the bucket. And the bucket cord can be long enough to hang out, and you'll see that here shortly. Okay, then you get these aerators, and they're just like what you would buy for your goldfish. And they stir the water and they give oxygen to it. And many of you may not realize it, but seed that's dunked for 16 hours dies, okay? It suffocates just like we would. And so you need to have air in there. And so we bubble it and we use that, leave the bubblers going when we put on the mutagen. We put the seeds in each bucket and then we pour in distilled water. Now, here's an important step. I'm gonna step away from the microphone. I like to put my seed on at 5 p.m. and go home and come back at 8 p.m. and at 9 p.m. we try to put on the mutagen. What you're trying to do is time the first mitotic cycle of the germinating seed. During mitosis, the DNA will split, and this is when you can get your chemical in there and have it make a substitution. So if you just randomly start off at any time of the day, it's not going to be as effective if you can't hit that 14 to 16, sometimes 18-hour cycle. So if you're having trouble, this is one of the variables you can look with. We pour the chemical in there after we've rinsed them. Let me go ahead one more slide. We leave the aquarium in there, add distilled water. We add the EMS to each bucket so a 3% volume-to-volume solution is reached. Somehow, when I took chemistry, a normality and molarity never sunk into me, but I can do volume-to-volume. So if we have 1,000 liters or 1,000 milliliters in there, I can put in 30 milliliters, or 300 in this case. 30? 30. No wonder it's kill all the seed, okay? Then when we get done, we rinse and we rinse and we rinse because we're going to have to handle the seed by hand. And I guarantee in the planting process, those gloves are going to tear up. After rinsing, we take them to our Quaker Street farm and we're going to seed them in the thing. With the Rhabdopsis and the alfalfa, We had to use a bona fide planting procedure where we soak the seed in water and just spread it out. This is how the grain sock looks. Notice we started with good intentions. Notice this hand has a glove on it. Notice this hand's given up the glove over time. And so it'd be best if you could provide some protection. I think that's my watch, okay, as we go through here. So the tractor drives along. We take the planting boxes off of the 4-row planter and just dribble the seed in as we go by. Okay? It's not very sophisticated. The Rabidopsis seed we planted in the flats. I used a water solution. I'm going to make these available at my Dropbox, so if you need this process, let me know and I will send you these slides. Cotton, we love cotton because you're going to get chimeras. Chimeras is where half the leaf's normal green and half the leaf's yellow. Chlorophyll mutants will show up like that. The M1 should show some of these. By the time you get to the M3, M5, these should be gone away. Okay? Peanut, soybeans, and switchgrass and alfalfa didn't work very good. The peanuts we felt may have had a toxicity problem, and then Braley fessed up that one of our air jets plugged in the middle of the night, and that was the two things that we had the soybeans and peanuts in. The switchgrass, we didn't have a very good seed bed, and we just didn't get good establishment. Ian Ray sent me some seeds of Doña Ana, and Ian says, Dick, don't do this. We already have enough genetic load in alfalfa as it is, but we're going to add some more, so we did that. The alfalfa was eaten by hungry jackrabbits, so those friends of mine with sanfoins and other problems with predation, it's universal. Okay, Dr. Winry Hsu sent me some corn, and I did it, and there is a chlorophyll mutant showed up here. We did actually produce one ear of corn, but we just couldn't get enough water with our hot summer we had this year on the corn. This is a wheat. We had an excellent stand of wheat, except it was a spring wheat, and we don't grow spring wheat because 100-plus degree temperatures doesn't agree with wheat production, and we were unable to get seed of wheat. Sesico and Dr. Eric Vatata sent me a cultivar, and we saw a few dominant mutations. We saw fasciation in peas. That's a dominant mutation, and it resulted in these huge stems like you see here. And while that looks really promising agronomically, it's not. But as cut flowers, it really is kind of a neat-looking flower. Gary Peterson from Texas A&M's AgriLife sent me two sorghums, and we had the first occurrence of sorghum smut in the head there. Sorghum had to be self-pollinated, not to self it, but to keep the birds from eating it. We get lots of predation. Mendu tells me, he's our new genomics person, he's been treating Arabidopsis at 0.25% and 0.5%. So treating Arabidopsis with 3% is unheard of phenomena. And he's already found a couple trichomutants and a couple biomass mutants. And he's pretty excited to look at those populations. We just wanted to see Arabidopsis. I expected it to die because it's relatively small seed size, and I expected it to be blown up with 3% AMS, but it took it surprisingly well. And that's what I have for you. If you would like these slides, give me a card or give me your email, and I will link you into my Dropbox because we really were asked to do this as a procedure. To get it there. Can someone get the backlights, please?
Okay, it's the top button. Thank you. Perfect. Any questions about the mutation creation station?
Isn't that neat?
Yeah. You could have made it.
Yes, ma'am. In another life, I used to be a canola breeder, and I burned canola with 3%, and I burned three chickpeas with 3%, and I burned about four other species with 3%, and they did fine. And so I thought it would have a broad range of adaptation. And you know, if you start doing a percentage and try to do a LD50, which is what we're trying to target there, you can spend a lot of time and you get a lot of exposure to the chemical. We do this one day in May. I spend all my EMS. I try to keep no stocks sold over, and we do it and we go out. Again, let me reemphasize that there is variation in these varieties. And I may not have induced it. I'm sure if I would have screened 120 acres with imidazolon of a one cotton variety, I would have found tolerance to it. But it makes me feel better. It lets me get an in population. If I can seed 4,500 plants from the M3 or advanced generation, allotetraploids or allohexaploids, allopolyploids may be a better way to say it. I try to keep an extra generation in selfing just because the genetics are so complex. Yes, sir.
Have you ever tried it on rice?
The question is, have I ever tried this on rice? I have not. If I haven't got enough water to make wheat, and I haven't got enough water to make corn, and I had to nurse the sorghum, no, I have not tried this on rice. And what I was trying to do is, I want you to try this. It's a good supplement to a regular breeding program. It's not a whole breeding program, but I want you to know it can be simple. But I also want you to obey the safety guards, or we're going to get somebody hurt doing this. We see a lot of chlorophyll mutants, but that's not what we're going for. Where this works really good is herbicide resistance, because you can seed four rows of a variety that's been treated and four rows of another variety and spray them. The nurseries look horrible, because you're going to take about 1 in 1,000, 1 in 10,000 plants to maturity, but it's great for herbicide resistance. It'd be great for an obligate parasite. But the creativity is not the mutation. The creativity is developing the screening process. Okay, so that's why we share this. That's what we call it, mutation creation. Because my friends and my breeders across New Mexico and Texas, they have plans, different plans. I say, go after it. I'll probably do herbicide resistance just because I can do it so cheap and so fast. Yes, sir, in the back. Okay. When I first did this and I had a chimera show up, I was totally shocked. I was told that it would be a heterozygote and be hidden, you know, all the time. So there is some somatic crossing over that goes on, or we wouldn't have chimeras after mutation treatment. And it's surprisingly frequent. I didn't call to your attention, but the alfalfa was sectoring like crazy, okay? That was one plant at about 500, but it's sectoring there. So there's more somatic crossing over. The plants are sectoring. They're chimeric, and you'll have a whole stem come off that's yellow and everything. And so I think when we self that, and I bulk all myself, so I don't do pedigree selection we do with studies like DePicchi's doing, but I don't do it in the mutation process. I want those chlorophyll mutants to go away, so I just self. And a homozygote of that is going to come up, the sun's going to hit it, it's going to die. Thank you for your attention.
I have one other question, actually.
Okay.
All right.
No, go ahead.
One of the things I noticed in doing EMS mutagenesis is a lot of times you have a lot of sterility in the M1s. You notice that? Male sterility especially?
To be honest with you, we don't take those kind of notes. I plant them out there. If they don't make seed, sun or...
I was wondering what kind of seed set you had under the bags of sorghum.
Actually pretty good, if we get to them before the birds do. We have some that are partially sterile, and I'll just bulk them along too. So I try very consciously not to do anything in the M1 or M2, and for cotton, for sure, not do anything to the M3.
We've had a lot of problems with sterility, so we put these in isolation and let them open pollinate, so that the male sterile ones can be pollinated by their adjacent.
Yeah, I've been trying to use bee populations, so they'd be fertile and stuff. I hope Gary gave me bee populations or I got a real problem.